And you're very welcome to the show. It is just gone 3 minutes past 12 here on Thursday, the 17th of January, 2013. You're listening to On The Record here on Lisburn's 98 FM, your station, your voice. As we are your station, we are your voice. There is a variety of ways you can contact us. You can text us on 07624-801-988. That number again is 07624-801-988. Or you can email us, lisburns98.8fm@live.co.uk. Or if your musing is 140 characters or less, you can tweet us at lisburns98. We're also on Facebook, just search lisburns98fm, and don't forget to like us. Now, we have a very special guest with us today, just to kick off the show. As many of you know, the flags issue has been making the headlines over the past 6 weeks, and we have with us the local Ulster Unionist MLA, Mr. Basil McRae. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
My pleasure.
So, just want to begin. Now, you've been very vocal on the flags issue. You've been, it's created a bit of distance between yourself and the Ulster Unionist Party. You released a statement on the 4th of January saying that you thought the flags move was a cynical move. And I'm just wondering, can you explain why you thought that?
Well, as we're sat here in Lisburn, you can go down to the Civic Centre and see that the flag is not flying. And that's because in 2006, the council took a decision to fly it on designated days plus 2 days, I think, in addition. Mm-hmm. And that was all done with the minimum of fuss. It didn't cause any any annoyance. In fact, most people didn't know it had happened. And so whenever you look at the way that things were handled in Belfast City Council, where people put out leaflets to tell people this was happening, there was a lot of emotive speeches in the chamber. All of it comes to the conclusion that the reason why people do this, rather than the more behind the scenes type of approach that was taken in Lisburn, is that they wanted to make party political points. Mm-hmm. Now, people are entitled to do that, of course. That is the nature of politics, but you do have to face the consequences about what happens if you stoke up people's fears. If you make it emotive, then you will get the reaction, and the reaction we've all seen in the streets, and it's been hugely damaging for Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Now, it has caused a bit of division between yourself and the Ulster Unionist Party. You've said that you elaborated further in your statement. You talked about just the general state of the Unionist Party over this year. You said that the party had lost its way. And that was reinforced again this week with the defection of Fred Cobain, your former party colleague, MLA for North Belfast, to the DUP. Said he may not agree with you on much, but he agreed with you on that. Can you just explain? You said that the Unionist Party had lost its ability to win any argument after a succession of election defeats. Where do you think the Unionist Party has lost its way?
Well, there's no doubt that we have had a series of very difficult elections over the last 10 years. And we started on the basis of the Belfast Agreement, which was the major agreement, if you like, that brought some form of peace and stability. Now, nobody said it was perfect, but it was what it was, the best we could come up with at the time. And since then, the party's become under pressure, we've lost seats, we've lost votes, and there's a temptation for people to say, well, that must have been wrong. It wasn't wrong, it was absolutely the right way to go forward. But we now have a debate within the party between those people that in the past might have voted yes for the agreement and those people that would have voted no, even though they were within the party. And that's where we're having difficulty, that we are no longer absolutely clear about what it is that we stand for. Mm-hmm. And when you have a message that is not clear, then frankly people have difficulty voting for you.
Yeah. Do you think that under the leadership of Mike Nesbitt, do you think that the party, the way it is going at the moment, will ever find its way again?
Well, that's actually a question maybe that you have to put to Mike Nesbitt rather than to me. I can only say as I
find it. But you are an MLA, though. You are a senior member of the party, though. So do you think, from the sense that you have, you are a senior person within the party, though?
Well, I'm not overly happy with the direction that the party is going in. I support my colleague John McAllister when he says that we are sleepwalking into unionist unity. I do think that there is not sufficiently clear blue water between ourselves and our electoral opponents. Mm-hmm. And if there's no clear blue water, then it's very hard to go out and say to the public what you stand for. So leadership is all about saying, this is what we stand for, this is why you should vote for me, this is why you should follow me. And I do think that that task still remains to be done. It has not been done adequately at the moment. And if we do not deal with it, then we will suffer yet more losses at the elections.
I think you agree with John McAllister when he says that he believes that the party is sleepwalking into unionist unity.
The rounds of joint statements, joint meetings, joint photocalls, You know, people are quite right to ask, what is the difference between yourselves and the DUP? And there is an old adage, if you'll forgive me, if it walks like a duck, if it talks like a duck, then it probably is a duck. And that's where we're heading. It is not good for unionism. It is not good for Northern Ireland. And I personally, if I had wanted to join the DUP, would have joined the DUP.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that the policy that is being pursued, I mean, obviously, one of the things that has come out of the flag dispute is the unionist forum, and there seems to be this drive between Peter Robinson and Mike Nesbitt to get a coherent unionist response to the flag situation. What is your, do you think that the unionist forum is part of that process of sleepwalking into unionist unity?
I think it just sends out difficult and perhaps contradictory messages. You know, what is the forum going to do that working on the ground wouldn't have done? You know, these problems that have arisen have not arisen over, you know, the last, you know, six to eight weeks. They've been happening over many years of disengagement. And so I don't think any form of short-term fix is going to solve the problems. I'm not against engaging with people from all walks of life to find out how you you might deal with their concerns, but a sort of a grandstanding and a big forum, I'm not sure that that will produce any results. Now, I'm prepared to give it a bit of time to see, maybe it will come up with something, but in the past these things have been more of a fig leaf than actually a solution.
Okay, and what is your solution then? What would you suggest? Is there a solution?
Well, you know, there's an old adage that it wouldn't have started from here in the first place. You know, the damage is now very, very considerable. The impact on our businesses, the impact on tourism, the impact on confidence, the impact on community relations, all extremely negative. So you turn around and you say, well, how are you going to resolve the matter? You first of all have to get people off the streets. And then you have to go through a long process of telling people the truth. You do have to explain to people about that consensus is necessary, or compromise is necessary. It is not a dirty word. It is the way that you go forward in any democracy, trying to work out what is the best for the most people. And that we have to be honest with the people and say sometimes this involves making decisions that not everybody agrees with. And if you wanted to go back and ask me, well, okay, your premise was how do you get people off the streets, I do have to say that we are getting to the stage now where a significant number of the population are getting fed up, absolutely fed up with not being able to go through the on their way to work or pick up children from childcare or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I do think that we are increasingly looking at a policing response that does more than just contain the situation, that actually resolves the situation.
You think the police should do something more now? You think they should be moving the people off the streets?
I think there is an issue where the right to peaceful protest does not extend to intimidation. It certainly doesn't allow you to stand outside individual people's homes or offices for long periods of time. I think it's important that the roads are kept open. I'm prepared to take guidance, if you like, from the police commanders, and I have spoken to them about, look, we need a bit more time, we're working on these issues. I understand the sensitivities, but you also have to say to the police is that the vast majority of people are saying enough is enough. We need to keep our roads open, that we have rights as well, that there must be a way of encouraging peaceful protest that does not drag our country through the gutter.
How do you think, just, I mean, you said that, and you said something in your statement that stuck in my head, and that was re-quoted a lot. The simple truth to Northern Ireland is we live in a divided society. There is no future for Northern Ireland that is not based on a shared future. Now, in response to the flag protests and to the violence over the weekend, your party leader Mike Nesbitt said that these protests are strengthening nationalism, and it's kind of like this us and them mentality that is still being pursued. How do you think that that, you know, political leaders, you know, on both sides have responded to the crisis, and don't statements like that you're strengthening the other side just worsen the problem?
Well, we are so fragmented that it's hard to know what anybody would say that would appeal to everybody. You know, no matter who says it or what they say, somebody will take some form of umbrage at it. I can only say the earlier part that you led into that question about the reality that we are a divided part of the world is self-evident. It does not mean that you cannot form a way of working and living and being together, but you cannot do it if you are using emotive language, threatening behaviour, or basically you're bringing the country into disrepute. You do have to build. You have to build a shared future. It's not something that just happens. And I do think that all political leaders need to be very careful about the language that they use.
Mm-hmm. How do you find you did talk about very much about the party. How do you find the response you're getting from local members of the UUP to your stance, and just generally across the party across the province?
Well, I'm confident. I'm more confident about saying what the local UUP people think, because obviously I've been engaging with them and talking to them about what's happening. I would say that it's about 80-20 in favour of my position from the local UUP.
That big?
Happy with what I'm saying, yeah. There are obviously people that have been quite vocal and have gone into the paper that said that they're not happy. Those people are entitled to their opinion, but I think that they're in the minority. Most of the people, whenever I explain the difficulties that are facing us, come back and say, well, that is a sensible, reasonable and appropriate response.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I stand on. So I'm comfortable that those people with whom I've engaged, that I've had a very constructive discussion.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the wider bit, I think you'll find that in the west of the province that they have a slightly different view of things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how they think about my stance, but I do know that I'm getting some support there. But certainly where I'm speaking from in Lisburn, I am getting a lot of support.
Okay, now what you say is a sensible, reasonable response has got you in trouble. You have been disciplined by the party leader. You have lost the whip. Now, for anyone out there who doesn't know, that is, you have lost privileges. What privileges have you lost now?
Well, I'm not allowed to attend the UUP assembly group meetings where they discuss policy. And obviously, whenever I speak, I do not speak on behalf of the UUP. So that's the main privilege that's gone. There's an issue about where I sit in the chamber, and I also have difficulty now getting to speak in the chamber because I'm effectively an independent. So out of 108 MLAs, I think I'm 108th in the pecking order for who gets to speak. So that's disappointing, but it does not stop me talking like I'm talking to you on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Or in other media outlets, and I think that I will do my level best to put forward an issue.
But you obviously feel that this wasn't deserved, this punishment?
I'm absolutely confident, completely 100% confident, that everything that I have said was in line with written party policy. Had got the sanction of the appropriate people within the party.
And you think the party's response was then harsh?
Well, there's a disciplinary process that will come up, and I will see how that goes. But people can only make their judgment on the basis of information that's presented to them. I intend to present the written evidence and support material that I have to say, this justifies what I said and why I said it, and I am absolutely adamant that I did the right thing for the right reasons.
Okay, now the reason I'm asking whether you think they're harsh, I think in the past you've seen that a lot of people who have been punished by the party for speaking out have lost their, like, a chair off the committee or things like that. They've never actually lost the whip. Do you feel you've been, that's what I mean, if you feel you've been treated harshly in comparison to other people?
Well, there's a combination. I think I've been treated. I don't agree with the removal of the whip, and I don't agree with some of the allegations that have been put forward by people, some of them named, some of them unnamed sources, and I will defend my integrity on that basis. With regard to the other issues you mentioned, so there, with regard to the chair of the Committee for Employment and Learning, we are doing an awful lot of very good work, which will be of interest to people around here, about careers information and how we get skills right and how we get young people into jobs. And, you know, it is the committee that deals with these very important issues. So I'm sort of quite committed to the work that's been done there.
And but you're remaining the chair at the minute?
Well, that is in the gift of the UUP, mm-hmm. and they have not yet told me to vacate the chair. But, you know, if they do, then I will, obviously. But for now, I'm actually pleased that I've had the opportunity, because we're halfway through a very important inquiry, to keep on going at the work. But, you know, we will see where that goes. It's I've had no communication with the party on that matter whatsoever, so I'm not sure what's in their mind.
Okay, and now next week you are facing your disciplinary committee. You must have some idea. Obviously, you've thought of the different outcomes, you know, and you obviously must be thinking of your future. I mean, where does it lie? Does it lie within the Ulster Unionist Party, if you wanted it to?
Well, I see the Disciplinary Committee as an opportunity for me to just bring to the attention of those that need to know what I said, why I said it, and why it is absolutely within line with the Ulster Unionist Party policy.
So you're looking for vindication?
You know, it's not for me to prejudge what the committee will find, but certainly I will be going in offering what I think is a pretty compelling case, but they will make their decision and then I will make mine.
You said one thing that really, of the comments that you've made, has really stood out to me. You quoted Harry Truman, the former President of the United States, just kind of some of your positions. You said, to be able to lead others, man must be willing to go forward alone. And just wonder, can you elaborate a wee bit more on that? What did you, I mean, how far are you willing to go by yourself on this issue?
Well, of course, the message wasn't, and that quote wasn't just for to do with me, it was to do with other political leaders. And they are faced sometimes with very difficult messages to communicate. But in the situation that we find ourselves in now, sometimes you have to just tell the people the way it is, unpopular though that may be, and try and offer them some vision of the way forward that will take them to a better place, so that any difficult decisions are worth doing. So, but the ultimate message comes down is that you sometimes have to do it yourself. You cannot just talk and talk and talk and wait for a consensus to form. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to do it. If it's not the wrong analogy, but sometimes you have to plant the flag and see who will rally to it. It is important that if you have a view about the future, that you stand your ground, you tell the people what it is, and you are honest and honourable about what you think you can do for people.
Yeah. Have you been approached by any other parties that would be interested in you joining them?
Well, I've certainly you know, we have discussions with as individuals all the time, that people come up and talk to you, and there's a certain amount of mirth and merriment where people say, oh, come on over to us if you're not happy there, or they don't like you. I mean, so you have a bit of discussion about that. The reality of the situation at the moment is that we are in such a fluid state in politics that it is not clear what is the right way forward for either individuals or parties or the community. I do sense that there is some pressure for realignment coming up, that clearly many people feel that whatever the intentions of the current political parties or politicians, they are not adequately representing their views or in the appropriate manner. So there is definitely a tension out there to do that.
Would you be part of that realignment? Can you see yourself as being part of it?
Well, everybody is, you know, everybody is part of it, because if some people move, like you mentioned, I think that Fred Cobain had moved from the party. We've had David McNary has left in the past. All of these things have an impact on other individuals within the party. But, you know, the same thing happens about whenever they go to other parties, they will have an impact where they go there. So,
are you talking about a realignment within unionism or a realignment of political parties?
No, I think it might be wider than that. I think there is a very serious challenge to our community about, where do you want to go? Do you want to build a future, or do you feel more secure going over the same old battleground that you've done for the last 400 years? You know, I will say to people, I cannot change the past. The only thing that I can do is influence the future. I believe in providing people with a future. need to find a vehicle, a communications channel, a way of doing that to put my view forward to the population. But ultimately, the electorate and the electorate alone will decide what is the right way forward and who speaks for them.
So when you say another vehicle, are you possibly thinking of a new party? Would that be where you're thinking of going?
I just think that there are no political party appears to be able to convince the electorate en masse that they have the way forward. And all of the political parties that I see seem to have people of every particular view in them. So you've got, within even, for example, the DUP, you will have people that would be considered to be moderate and more progressive. You would also have people that are more traditional. You'll have people that would be on the right, you'll have people that would be on the left. And all of this is really confusing for the electorate. The electorate does not know what they're voting for. They think they're voting for something, and then something else comes up. And that is a form of disillusionment. That is actually what destroys confidence and trust in politics. And I think that the political system needs to change to give people a clear understanding of what they're voting for and why. And having done that, the electorate rules, democracy rules.
Okay. And just looking again at next week at your disciplinary hearing, what would be the best outcome for you?
I would be really pleased if people would come forward and say that Basil McRae has acted in the best interest of the party and within party policy. And if I could get that ruling, that would be really positive.
And would you hope to remain a member of the Ulster Unionist Party? You've talked about you're not happy with the direction of the party, and you do appear to be increasingly uncomfortable within it. Would you wish to remain in it?
I've been quite clear on the record that I joined the Ulster Unionist Party because of my support for the Belfast Agreement. I believed in the Belfast Agreement when it was signed. I believe in it now. It wasn't perfect, but it was the right direction to go forward. And I've made it clear that as long as the party remains welded to the values that are put forward of a shared future in the Belfast Agreement, then that's where I will be. There is a discussion that comes back in about if there are differences of opinions within the party or without, well then let's have them, let's have the discussion. But I'm quite confident about where I personally see the future of Northern Ireland.
And if the decision next week isn't good, it isn't what you want, and you are no longer a member of the Ulster Unionist Party, will you go independent or will you go to a different party?
Well, I'm, I'm not entertaining the issue that I'm that my view will not prevail at this stage, but I did say to you that it is for the Ulster Unionist Party to make their decision, and then I will make mine.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Basil McRae. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Record.